Hallelujah. Good morning, everyone. Thank you. Well, God is doing good things. Hallelujah. I feel that last Friday night's message and the Sunday night before that are two messages that I think have done more already in the hearts of the people here than any message I've preached for a long time. And if you missed those two sessions, I would suggest that you get the tapes and you listen to them. And in fact, I think a lot of you would do well to listen to the tapes again. And this next month, just take time to listen to those again and let that really cement those things in your heart. I delivered my soul last night, or Friday night, as it were, and in those two sessions I did. And while I would like to speak along the same subjects, I have delivered my soul. I don't really feel anointed right now to have anything more to say for the moment on that. I will be finishing this morning the theme we've been on for some time is our changing world, what we will see up ahead here and what's happening in this nation. I will finish that this morning. To tell the truth, I'm really glad to get off the subject because I feel the change already. I think I'm overlapping in finishing, but I feel I must do that. I will be gone the next two weekends, and then after a rest, I'll come back. Keith, I'll have one more session with you, one more weekend, and then Keith will be here the following week. I feel it's imperative, it's important that we use this month in preparing our hearts in accordance with the message brought last Friday night. How many feel that way? I feel that hope, great hope has arisen in many people. And I know people are making decisions that they haven't been making. And so although this morning the subject is entirely different, use also the understanding of the time is running out. And the end time, the things that are happening to this nation. And if you got one foot in the world and one foot in the kingdom of God, recognize that you're going to have to make up your mind. This world is getting horrible. And it's dangerous out there. And we need to really understand what's happening and get on God's side and really get praying. One more thing, and I feel like the Scripture tells us to pray for those that have the rule over us, for those civil magistrates, kings, rulers, governments. And I think we ought to do that. And I think you'll see in the bulletin this morning that we have initiated two prayer meetings, two short ones for that purpose. If you can join them, please do so. And if you can't, be praying that God will allow a more letting process and hold back the liberal activist forces and the leftist forces in this nation and give our president and those in power his mind and heart and help them not to fold up just because the liberals hit them with a big wallop, and help them to stand for truth and for things that they know are right and reverse the policies. And when you pick up your newspaper and you see these things, just stop a moment and pray. And when you, from time to time, be praying for the president of this nation and those that are in authority. If you want something better in this country than what it is, pray. Pray that God will give us more liberty before we get squeezed out. Now, in the morning service, I'll be finishing the series on what will our future be like, the 11th of the series. This morning I'll be on a topic that I've been talking about for some time, about the State of the Union, so to speak, something that I haven't really brought you, that I feel like I really should. It's a lot of reading, but some choice things. I feel you really should be aware of these things. So I'm entitling this morning, A Changing World Toward World Government. Four topics, readings, with comments. One, the unconstitutional laws to restrict freedom. It's a growing trend. Number two, deprogramming Christians coming up. Number three, a national and international trend to weaken the rich Christian nation and prepare for anarchy, revolt, a new government, and finally world government. And number four, the decaying spiritual fiber in Christians if I get that far. An alarming trend is merging in America, and that is unconstitutional laws being made by government agencies. Now, the liberals are pushing their views, not only through the press, for which they, for the most part, control, and through Hollywood, through movies and television, and through education, but now through unconstitutional laws. And these laws cannot be ignored. Unconstitutional or not, they are laws. And these laws stick. They stick. Unconstitutional or not. Unless you get involved in a long, drawn-out, costly court battle in which the thing would be reversed. And knowing that these things are difficult for the average person, and there are so many laws being unconstitutional laws being made today, that and in one state after another, and in one city after another, that they know there's no way to keep up with it. And even though you can knock down some, and some will have national precedents and state precedents, nonetheless, it's to the liberals' advantage to be doing this, and they're really making it rough. And so far, God has been helping Christians to a large extent, but it's a real battle. It's a long, costly battle. And we really need to be praying about this. On the other hand, the activist liberals blatantly ignore laws and defy laws. Openly come against and defy laws in this nation that work against their cause in such numbers and with such propaganda that they get away with most of it. And the police are afraid to do anything. They come in such masses, and they put such power behind it, that they're afraid of public reaction, and so they don't, they just kind of, you know, they do what they have to do as carefully as they can, but they're getting away with a lot of it. And that they don't get away with, they evoke public support for them. They use it for propaganda means to spread it even further. And when they're challenged by the police, they use something that they have already prepared for in advance, public animosity towards the police, to help them. And so they get the support of the people against their own state for their liberal cause. Years of anti-police movies are having their effect, preparing people for activist and leftist battles against the police. When they really get moving, they will come up because they control the media. They will put out things that will cause the people, rile them up, get them on their side, provoke things against the police, and the people are going to come in, I predict, by the thousands and join with them against the police. And the liberal causes are going to steamroll over the country. This, along with demonstrations they've been holding in the past, getting people willing and even anxious and excited to demonstrate in huge numbers against their own government, which is pure anarchy. The general anarchy they've been teaching, the general questioning everything, questioning authority, everything being based on what is right instead of what is authority. And what is right, of course, is being programmed them into them from the liberal press and the movies and TV, and with all the teaching on unsubmission and rebellion, are going to pave the way for public support with battles against the police. I feel sure of that in my mind. Just read an article the other day in the paper. They saw, two police saw this man aimlessly wandering in the middle of the streets in Los Angeles, and some of you have read it, and they walked up to him, and he drew a long 8-inch hunting knife. Now, you know, they were just going to tell him, you know, ask him what he's doing or move on or something, or get out of the street or something. He drew a hunting knife. He had a guilty conscience before he started. And so the police both drew the revolvers, since they had he had a dangerous weapon. And they ordered him, under the threat of those bullets, to put that knife down. He wouldn't do it. They were afraid to shoot him on the spot because of public reaction, I suppose, and also The paper just said endangering the crowd, but I think that they can shoot a man close enough that the bullet was staged in the individual and doesn't endanger the crowd. But I suspect the real reason was fear of public reaction that would come. And so they put the guns back in the holsters, and they took out the billy clubs and forced them with the billy club. And then, but you know, even then they're afraid to haul off and whack him across the skull and knock him out. You know, knock him out of do danger, brain injury if it's public reaction. So they, you know, they play around best they can with him. And one of them trying to subdue him. See, they, instead of just trying to knock him insensible, which they should do, in my judgment, no ifs, ands, or buts. But instead, they try to subdue him without hitting him over the cranium if they can because of public reaction. And in doing so, when the policeman got his gash across the back of his hand, in which case the other one went ahead and lopped him in the back of the head and knocked him out. But during the time, the crowd was constantly for the man with a knife, for the criminal, and he was screaming at him to stab the police. Stab him! Cut him! Get him! Stab him! They were all for the man against the police. Now, who are police? Individuals hired by us, by our money, to protect us from criminals. And so they side with the criminals against the people we hire to fight the criminals. You see how bad things are getting. You see how bad things are getting. All policemen today, and I've heard from many of them, know that we have a marshmallow police force today. They cannot do what they want to do. They even have to put up with all the guts from these young sassy brats, you know, blast them all the way to the police station. You know, they no longer can rule with a rod of iron. It isn't like back in the 1920s, you know, in the last 1800s, when the police had some authority. They're really in trouble. And now, these unconstitutional laws I'm talking about, they're being made by the IRS, and the one culprit, President Reagan, admitted that. That they're making laws beyond their powers given to them. And the Christian Legal Defense and Education Corporation, whatever it is, has frequent articles about the IRS abuse. Doing things that are absolutely, totally unconstitutional, immoral, and wrong. And the way they come right into a pastor's home, into the Christian schools and so forth, without any warning, you know, just and interview other people, bolt up, just take over, chase them out. The way they operate, make sure that the court trials are held in days when the pastor and people are out of town and all kinds of things, all the antics. So what they're doing is entirely wrong. Caseworkers of Hugh is another one. Lots of those caseworkers on the spot are making unconstitutional decisions and doing things that are improper. I had a case in Owen Churchill where they come right in, and this person had I mentioned this to you before once, this person had a girl that was involved in lesbianism, young girl. But she was out of it, saved for the Holy Ghost, and she was thankful to be delivered. And they wanted to, you know, be able to keep her into the home, and the caseworker had nothing doing. We're taking it away from you because she has a right to choose lesbianism and you won't let her choose lesbianism. They said she doesn't want lesbianism. She's glad to be delivered. Doesn't make any difference what she wants. She has a right for either. And you don't believe in either. Now you see, they just haul off, make their own decisions, make up their own laws as they go along. Even our water districts do that, make unconstitutional laws. I had the legal aid lawyers tell me, oh, yeah, they're private organizations, private entities. They're not government like most people think they are. And they make up laws. They say they're just a collection of, you know, milkmen and whoever they happen to vote together to be. They're not lawyers. They make up laws. They're unconstitutional. Unless you take it to court, why, that's the way it goes. They were charging two people for the same pipeline. They're getting away with it. These things happening all over the country. Unconstitutional laws are being made. State legislatures are another one that are making unconstitutional laws. And we've been seeing some cases here recently in Olympia. And they're totally unconstitutional. But the legislatures, they're not all high-powered lawyers either, you know. They're whoever that are voted in. And they make laws, and away you go. And we've seen some real bad ones here recently, and we've brought it to their attention, and more majorities come in, why, it was a lot of oops. Well, we didn't realize that this was this. We didn't realize this meant this, and we didn't think about that. And they didn't even bother to submit it to some organization that can bring in the religious views and objections and top panel of lawyers to review it, make sure it all worded right and all that. The sloppiness in which the legislatures move astounds me. But that seems to be the name of the game. Lower courts are making unconstitutional laws. And my authority for saying that is that Supreme Court declared them unconstitutional. And this is happening very frequently. And they have to take it up, and then they say, that's unconstitutional. They overruled the law. So if we can believe in our Supreme Court, this is true. Building departments, zoning officials are requiring things and doing things entirely unconstitutional. They're getting away with it. And bureaucracies, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, in our nation. I'm going to read to you just two cases. One of them is called Your Home Is Not Always Your Castle by Samuel Erickson. I'm not positive what magazine this came out of, unfortunately. But it says, in 1980, Mayor Tom Bradley of Los Angeles stated that a Bible study would not be permissible use in a single-family residential area. Now, that means in Los Angeles, no more Bible studies in homes. Since this would be considered a church activity. In a town near Boston, different case, the building commissioner notified a clergyman that inviting more than four people to his home for a Bible study was a violation of the home occupation ordinance. In Atlanta, a zoning official stated that any kind of regular home Bible study which includes non-residents is illegal, but a special use permit. Homeowners in Los Angeles were warned that if even one non-resident entered the home for a religious service, a cease and desist order could issue. Two Maryland residents, you see, not just one town, two Maryland residents were issued a citation for using their homes for worship services without a use and occupancy permit. That was more than a warning. In Canton, Michigan, a local pastor was told by a zoning official that any regular Bible study in a home was a violation of the zoning ordinance, and the code for Canton makes no provision for special use permit. Now, I'm not positive that I guess it's not. All of the above incidences have taken place in the past 18 months. The central issue in these cases is the extent to which the First Amendment offers protection for these types of activities. The use, I'm going to take time to read all of this. I wish I could read more of it. The Supreme Court made it clear that the state cannot impose restrictions which are simply based on either the content or the subject matter of the discussion. The law is presumptively unconstitutional. There's more to it, but I don't have time to read everything. This next one is deprogramming, no longer just a cult issue. Now, I predicted this when this thing first happened, and we haven't seen the end of this one, just the beginning. Again, I can't read it all. The anti-conversion bills, I think I'll start up here. Currently, the specific issue which calls for an answer to this question concerns deprogramming and the many anti-conversion or anti-cult bills presently pending in at least 8 state legislatures. So, the anti-conversion bills pending in state legislatures usually take the form of granting a relative the right to be appointed as the temporary guardian of the person involved in the cult. The temporary guardianships are usually for a period of 60 days and can be extended by the court. The person appointed as guardian can use peace officers to help secure custody of the affected individual and may freely subject the individual to forcible deprogramming during the period of guardianship. And I've read about this in the Christian Legal Defense and Education magazines, papers. Deprogramming involves not only cults, but even members of mainline Protestant and Catholic churches. There have been recent attempts to deprogram a Catholic priest, a Roman Catholic priest, an Assembly of God pastor, several Episcopalians, two members of a Bible church, a young Baptist woman, and a 35-year-old woman with a Ph.D., programmed for her political views, as well as many others. Because of the deprogramming of members of religious groups outside the cults, the Christian body is awakening to the real issue of the infringement of religious liberty. If one religion or belief can be restricted, apart from criminal activity, then others can and will be restricted by those who are anti-religious and believe that religion and its influence are not good for society and conversion is abnormal. I have read cases in the Christian Legal Defense and Education papers of a young Baptist church and the things that kidnapping and false deprogramming and so forth, and they practically ruined that church, the press did, in the eyes of the people. That little tiny Baptist church was labeled a cult and just ruined by the press. The membership plunged. They really came in and see people being naive, you know. We are in a cult. They don't want to be part of a cult. Everybody, you'll go to that cult church. And they drop out because of it. They put that kind of pressure on them. Now, what's going to happen in this nation? When this nation is to a place, pretty soon you can't have Bible studies in your home anymore. Then you're going to have problems even getting another church in a locality. They told us that we wanted to have this building here. We don't need any more church in this area. Go build out in the country someplace. What's this, we don't need it anymore? When they came in, what if the rest of that about them? Supposing when the Lutheran church came in and said, we don't need any more. We got a Baptist church and a Nazarene church and Assembly of God church. See? I mean, you know, it's supposed to be the religious rights of people to come in. And as soon as you can say, we don't want your type of church, you get a problem. What's going to happen when they can start deprogramming us all? By forcible conclusions. No, it won't work a lot of us, that's true. But there are some that will work. The new converts coming in, the new babes. They got parents upset and angry and mad. We've run into that many times in this assembly of new people coming in, getting saved and filled with the Holy Ghost, and their parents being violent. Cutting off all communication, refusing to come to the weddings, refusing to have anything to do with them, took them out of the will, refused to have even talk to them, wouldn't answer the letters they wrote to them, even those that call themselves Christian. Now, some of these have since been converted, filled with the Holy Spirit, and having been saved, see. We have been accused here of when you come to community chapel, you have to cut off your relatives. It's the other way around, we have found. The other way around. The legislation, if enacted, now there's 8 states, and you better be sure that if it's enacted, it's going to be followed by many others. Would be subject to a broad interpretation and could be used by any relative who is hostile to the prospect of conversion. An example is the proposed New York version of the anti-cult bill. The bill says that a court has the power to appoint a temporary guardian if it's shown that the person has undergone a sudden and dramatic personality change which is identifiable by the following. Abrupt and drastic alteration, like at conversion, of basic values and lifestyle. As contrasted with a gradual change, such as that which might result from maturation or education. There was no conversions, just a gradual, long, slow brain thing. This sounds like a description of someone who's born again, leaves his old life behind, and begins living for Christ. A legislative answer would only cause restrictions on religious liberty and would vary depending on what group is in power. As James Madison once wrote, it is right to take alarm at the first experiment with our liberties. Thomas Brandon, Jr. The next trend, this is from an article called The New Economic and Political Order of the 1980s. Here's a little editor's note. Read a piece of it. John Nesbitt, publisher of the Trend Report, identified 5 powerful trends that are restructuring the United States and to varying degrees the other developed countries of the world. This is totally a non-religious issue. Trend number 1. Now, see, the average non-Christian reading this would not be alarmed at all he would have no idea it had anything to do, whether the average Christian even would read this thinking it was just secular and mundane. He would read this and think, this has got nothing to do with religion or anything. It's got a lot to do with religion. It has everything to do with religion. It has to do with world government under the Antichrist. But they would not interpret it as such because they don't know what's going on. Trend number one, from industrial to informational society. To me, this is a big one. The United States is rapidly shifting from a mass industrial society to an informational society. And the final impact will be more profound than the 19th century shift from the agricultural to an industrial society. In 1950, 65% of people working in this country were in the industrial sector. That means it's a powerful industrial nation. That figure today is around 30%. Our industry has dropped more than half. A dramatic change. In 1950, the number of people in the informational sector of the society was 17%. And now exceeds 55%. Now, there's two things that tells me. You can see why other nations are moving up industrially and why we're dropping down. That's one. Secondly, you can see why this liberal brainwash is having such a powerful effect. Everything is going informational. Thirdly, people that talk and don't produce drops your gross national product, drops the strength of your country financially. All this, everybody telling one another something instead of producing something, lowers you in the international scheme of things. and a comment I was going to make. I have read in other magazines, this country is not keeping up with mass technology, the technology in mass production. So now, for example, Japan makes a car, I think they said, in something like 17 hours, and we make a car in 30 hours. So we let them get ahead of us by double. We are not keeping up. That means price competitions. Now, see, all these things are not by accident. Once you see everything together on all fronts and all everything together collected, and then put it with the Bible, and put it with the attitude of everything that's happening, you can see this is not just an accidental thing. That's just because, you know, you're not winning on the Monopoly board till you almost got everything. Now, if you have almost everything, everything falls apart and everybody else starts winning. It doesn't work that way. Once you get most of the board, you're secured. You're secured. The mathematical probabilities are always landing in your spaces. You're always collecting, and you can afford to give, and they can't get very much from you, and you get bigger and bigger. The whole game of monopoly is bankruptcy of the rest of the world except for you. And this United States has gotten to we had most of the world's gold and most of the world's power, and all of a sudden it's all tumbling. But it's tumbling because not the little tiny nations had any power over us. We are dismantling our own country and all these sectors. The strategic resource in the industrial society was capital. The strategic resource in the post-industrial informational society is knowledge, because you know what kind of knowledge, and data, which is not only renewable, but it's self-generating. Yeah. That means our capital is going down, which is exactly what they want to level us for international world order. And information of the liberal sort, it's changing people's values, standards, attitudes, and so forth, getting ready for the new social world order. As we move into a more and more literacy-intensive society, our schools are giving us an increasingly inferior product. This is a powerful mismatch. SAT scores, the test to qualify for college, have been going down each year for more than a decade. We all experience that our young people are not outstanding when it comes to writing and arithmetic. Consider this. For the first time in the history of the United States, the generation, not the year of the generation, that is graduating from high school today is less skilled than its parents. At the beginning of this nation, every generation had more skill and more education and more until this last generation. And we've been going downhill again. Now, once you've built that point, why should you start going downhill?
We should keep on going uphill.
But there's a reason for it. They don't want to keep going uphill. All you got to do is look at the courses in high schools and colleges to know that. Rocking chair classes, how to rock. That was one of them offered up here at the university. Ever read those other kind of extra courses you can take? They are the most ridiculous things you ever imagine. You wouldn't think of having those in those early college and university, but wouldn't think of having these stupid things that are coming in. And a lot of blah, blah, blah sessions. But students sit around, there's a lot of wasting time. I saw them on one campus down in California, they went with a big bamboo pole out there, you know, and a lot of people jumping off and various things. Oh, they're wasting the time. There's so much wasted time today. Every kind of stupid thing possible to waste people's time so they won't learn so much. Instead of realize, we get a problem. All people graduate from high school, they don't know how to sign checks, buy houses, do anything. Why aren't they giving them intensive courses in how to bank, how to deal in the world with all the things of buying and selling and pre-law and all the other things? No, they don't teach them all those things. Leave them ignorant. Just teach them a lot of dumb things. Now, all this is planned for world leveling. Because this God-given nation, this God-appointed nation, godly nation as it once was, has become, had too much of God's blessing, has pushed it way up above all the rest of the world because God has been with his own people. And so now they're dismantling the thing. Trend number two, from centralization to decentralization. There is more decentralization than centralization taking place in America for the first time in the nation's history. The power is shifting, not only from the president to Congress, but less notice from Congress to the states and localities. Now, what they're getting ready for in this is this. There's some good to this, because our national government has become too powerful and too big, taking over too many areas of public sector. But you see, they always take advantage of the mismanagement in order to do certain things for more mismanagement. That's the way this liberal society works. They can't do anything right and straight because their minds aren't straight, because they're led by the devil. And so what's happening is there's a move on towards lawlessness. In other words, don't recognize authority. They don't have to recognize that authority. They don't recognize that authority. Take away authority. Because if you get a pyramid government with real authority, you can keep your nation in check. But they're headed for lawlessness. And that's why, you know, the police have a hard time today. The fire department gets stoned by people who go put out fire. People have been throwing stones at the fire department. I mean, let the house burn down. People got out to jump. They yell, jump, jump, jump. See, they want violence and splatter and kill and see, everything. Today we're in a place where animals and plants are important. People are not, you know, by the ecologists. The health of the nation is not important. It's the plants and the rodents, you know. And things like this. Everything's being twisted today. They're trying to develop. Now, understand this. While they're moving authority down, there are certain people that are not losing authority. That's called the ten kings, who rule without kings yet. They are swallowing up the conglomerates with bigger conglomerates. They're swallowing up the other industries. They're not getting less powerful. They're getting more powerful. The banks, others, the smaller banks, all these other smaller insurance companies, the industries, everything's being swallowed up by the big boys. And they're getting more and more power and have more and more push on the government. I was reading just the other day concerning some of these things. When Reagan got tough, for example, when the Russians came into Poland, so the bankers all marched into his office and said, nothing doing. This article was explaining detente, what it really meant, and some other things. And it was explaining the Russians invented detente because they were short on cash and wanted more Western money. And what's happening is this article was saying, this was put out by the anti-communist, Dr. Swartz's anti-communist paper anyway, and he's a leading authority on that subject. It's a good, the Christian anti-communist crusade. Thank you. And it's a top-notch paper, level-headed. And he said, so what's happening is all big banks, like Citizen Bank, New York, Chase Bank, etc., are loaning billions of dollars. They mentioned the $70 billion for some loans to communist nations, and those under communist control. They've loaned this tremendous amount of money, even though they are horrible risks. and without any security from them whatsoever. And then he went on and said, now why? He said, now you would think that these bankers have lost their head. He said, I have found that bankers are fanatical about making sure that you got proper security before they loan you anything. And he said, if you know any banks that will loan me money on that kind of thing, please inform me, you know, and so forth. A little sarcasm here, because you don't find that. They wouldn't loan their own citizens money on that kind of level. And yet, they are loaning it to them with no collateral. Now, why? And then they went on to show that we were informed that on this Poland deal, I think it was, that $70 million was going to be paid by the government to the banks because they didn't make payment. But then, through a little bit of work, they found out that $70 million was only the tip of the iceberg. It was only first payment on $370 million. And they went on to say that what happens is the United States government has insured over 50% of the loans made to communist countries, means us taxpayers are the collateral. And when they default, they take away from us. Now, what happens when things get to a certain point, they all default at once, and all of a sudden, what's going to happen when we get to pay all that back to the big banks? You ever thought about what happened when all of a sudden they decide to collect it all? All of a sudden, one big mass refusal of payment, and all of a sudden, hundreds of billions of dollars have to be paid by us to the big bankers all at once. There's going to be a shift of power. There's going to be a new not a shift of power, but a new increase of their power. Now, and this is done without anybody's permission here, and without our knowledge. Don't even tell us about it. For communism, for our enemies out here. The president of Citizen Bank said when they interviewed him, about why are you loaning money to communist nations that are working with they're using their money to build military power. And the reason for this, they invented because they don't want to use their money to take care of their nation because they don't have the money then to threaten us with big military power. So they use their money for military power and then have Western nations come in and give them money to keep them going. That's their daytime. And then it said, the president of Citizen Bank said, well, who knows what political system works? All we know is who pays the bills. See, they don't care. They're internationalists. They don't care about politics between nations. They only care about money, more power. And by loaning communist money, they get more money because they get all the tremendous interest off of it. Whether they pay it or whether we pay it, they don't care. Besides, it furthers the aims of some of those one-worlders by building up a threat that makes us have to borrow money from the big bankers so we can build more military to come for the threat so they get even more off of that. Interest off of that war game. Plus we sell over to the other side and create problems so we can sell to Israel and so we can sell to Egypt, we can sell to the Arabs, we sell on all sides at once, we sell to Iran and Iraq, we sell to both sides in the name of peace. We keep saying peace but we keep building both sides. And they get interest and all the money off of that. And they're slowly, or maybe not so slowly, now, collecting the power of the whole world on the monopoly board. The chips are coming down, not to the United States, it's dropping. It's for the one worlders. That's what all the money is going into these private hands that are controlling everything. So these people, when Reagan made that statement, they marched into his office and says, nothing doing. And they told him the facts of the game. And they couldn't order him. All they had to do was let him know how things are going, what would happen. And they default, or it's your people, and then all of a sudden your taxes and so forth. And when he saw the picture, why? He said, no, he's blackmailed. He can't do what he wants to do. That's how they manipulate people like this. And they said, now, if the United States, they said, if supposing Russia would default, would that be good? The Senate service would look like, well, that would be good for the Russians. Default? Don't make any payments. Right now, they said, no. Later, yes, but right now, no. Because we would take over then, and what they have, assets in the Western world, which isn't very much. But it said they are dependent on Western money for survival and keep going. Their military progress, their nation, everything that they've done requires Western money to be flowing in by the hundreds of billions that they can't keep up. And if they defaulted and we would draw back, their present structure would collapse. So our bankers are building the communists to threaten this country and to bring in and force world government.
I've been teaching this for a long time, but more and more we keep collecting more proof of the matter. Okay, back to this. I see I know I can get done. Trends move in different directions at different speeds. They have different weights. They have different life cycles. About 3 or 4 years ago, the heft and feel of the movement toward decentralization became greater than the heft and feel of those forces toward continued centralization. They're both at work in different areas for different reasons. The two great centralizing events in America's history were the Great Depression and World War II, plus the centralizing impact of industrialization. We are now receding from these centralizing influences. You remember in the 1950s and 60s, we began to celebrate ethnic diversity. Polish is beautiful. Black is beautiful. We started to celebrate our ethnic restaurants, which, of course, had been there all the time. An extraordinary thing happened in the late 1960s. We gave up the myth of the melting pot. For years, we had taught our children that America was a great melting pot, as if we were all put in a giant blender and homogenized New Americans. Now we recognize that it is our ethnic diversity that has made us such a vital, creative country, which is not true at all. But you see, they play one tune for a while to get things a certain place. Then they play a different tune and say, well, we used to think that's a myth. But at that time, they were demanding that was truth. And then they move over to heel. Now, that's all a myth. Now, just like women's fashions, just changed completely. Now, we're in this next stage of the game. And then when they achieve that purpose, they go on the next step. Now, well, we used to think, but now. And they're shifting, they keep moving towards the ultimate goal while the American dupes sit there with their eyes big, parroting everything that comes out of the TV. Now, you see, ethnic diversity has not made this country great. It's the system itself. It's the work of the people within the system and the liberties and whatever is involved in God's help that's made this nation great. Whether the person was a black, a Mexican, an American, a Polish, German, French, or Japanese, doesn't really make any difference. You know, all nations have got people with talent. We've all got talent. It would get done. You could take out this many and ship in that many. I mean, it didn't make any difference about nationality. It isn't the differences of people that made it great. In other words, Japan isn't becoming great because they have the diversities of different people. They're all Japanese and they're becoming great. The Germans can become great with a certain system, with all Germans. They don't have to have a certain amount of Polish, a certain amount of Mexicans, a certain amount of Italians. That isn't true. That's just another myth that people swallow because they don't think when they read this. It is an inappropriate question to ask, are we going to save our cities? That wouldn't used to be an inappropriate question. That's an either-or formulation. It doesn't work in a new multiple-option society. The point is, we'll save some of our cities, we'll not save others. We'll save some of our cities a little bit, we'll save others a great deal. And we'll all turn again on local initiative. In other words, the power is coming down to the areas for local initiative. You know what that means? Let me interpret that for you. The power blocks of society will decide, equals liberals. Those that have already got geared up and have been organized, and they've been putting power, you know, the women liberals and all these, the civil rights activists and all the movements, all these people who've got power, they've been organized, they will control the rest of us because it'll be local initiative. They'll come, they'll get in and they'll vote and they'll do this and they'll put pressure and they've got the mass media with them and they'll interpret things their way and et cetera, et cetera. And they're purposely decentralizing so that these groups can take over and push this country faster than what would happen otherwise. And this means that the Christians are going to have to really start doing something about things and not just watching over the fence at it. I'm about ready to ask for a volunteer army of letter writers that every time something happens, we'll notify them, we all write at once. And we just send in thousands of letters, and every time, whether it's newspaper, whatever it's doing, we just hit them all at once, and then we'll ask other churches to do the same, and start getting organized ourselves, and then do much praying about the matter. And I don't be surprised if I do that real soon. More and more, we are going to see the political left and right meeting on this issue of being against big government and against government regulations. That's interesting and it's true for different reasons. The right is against the big government because it's gotten out of line where it's taken over people's personal liberties, and the left are against it because it's blocking them from taking over by revolution. And so we'll both be working together to dismantle the bigger government and move it down. We have more liberty, and they so they can have their big revolutions, and so they can take over down here at this level, and it depends on who wins down at this level. Well, they've got more clout, they've got more organization, they've got more, they've got everything more behind it than we do. It favors us for a while, but it's going to turn out favoring them unless God really intervenes and the people really do something. It'll depend on the letting process, depend on the Christians whether they're moving for God or not, and how much, and so forth, and how long we have time before they finally take over. Proposition 13, I think, has to be understood as having a lot more to do with the initiative trend or the referendum trend than it has to do with taxes. We are submitting to the that they use different things where the real aim is back here. The people only see what they're telling them out here. We are submitting to the political processes, questions we have never submitted to before. The watershed on that was Proposition 15 in California 3 years ago when the citizens voted on whether or not to build a plant, for a plant, a nuclear plant, but nevertheless a plant. And, of course, you naturally vote on nuclear plants and other things, because that's the ones that they want you to vote on, because you want to get public opinion swayed to knock them down, because otherwise industries are going to build them, and the government's going to say, fine, but they want the people to get a no vote so we can cut down the power of this nation. I have got information from interviews with the top Russian nuclear authorities and top nuclear authorities in this country. We have it available. We've put it in the bulletin board for a while. That prove and give you all kinds of answers you have never read in anywhere in the papers that prove to you that it is the most safe form that there is. What would happen if 30 people killed in a nuclear accident? Down the nation. What if 300? What if 3,000 in our history? 3,000. You know the whale that would go up? Well, in coal mining, they've had 33,000 miners killed so far now since the beginning. And look at the constant oil spills and the ships that break up and all the things from that. There's all kinds of arguments and a lot more that I wouldn't even get into it. They do not really know. They have been trying to push the cost of nuclear energy up. They've done everything possible to force the prices up. They've sabotaged plants. They've done everything possible. And to report every little dinky thing that's happening, if they reported all the technology failures of everything that's happening in this country, you would be absolutely amazed. It goes on all the time. They're constantly shutting down plants and doing things that got problems all the time in technology. We have never submitted that kind of question to political process. There's no end to it. Last November, more than 400 questions were voted on around the country. There have been many votes on where we can and cannot smoke. 5 jurisdictions last year voted on using or not using public funds for abortions. 2 cities voted on South Africa. Long Beach, California voted on whether or not to have an oil tanker terminal, and later on the color of streetlights. We never voted on those kind of things before, but we're going to see more and more of this. It's part of this larger, direct democracy. We're voting on a great range of new things at times leapfrogging the traditional political process. Now, it sounds good. People like this. Oh, we want to have a say in this. We want to know what's going on. They're in no shape to have a say. How can they vote whether you should have a dam and pay $215 billion for a dam? They don't know what $215 billion is. They don't know how much they need. How much is really needed. They don't know what's going to happen if they don't. They have no way to equate that. You've got to have experts in the field to make those kind of decisions. That's like somebody here wanted to know how we were spending our money, your money. You're in no shape to know that. Big, thick reports, all kinds of data. The digging board sits for hours going into all the ramifications before they make a decision. You can't leave that up to every Tom, Dick, and Harry. You'd have fights now from now until the millennium. Nobody would understand. What are you going to do? Turn it over to people who don't even know? I mean, we need our best people to make the decisions. You voted them in for the reason. You need to trust them. This type of thing. Because once they've got the people good and brainwashed, they own the media, now they're doing this. You wouldn't find the liberals wanting to do that if the conservatives owned the media and everybody was pushed out there, they wouldn't think of it. If they held the top positions in the country and we had the media, they wouldn't do that. In America, but every time that things go against them, then they push through to the Supreme Court, they're back in the government again. In America, the Lord's general purpose instrumentalities are folding everywhere. An early sign and instructive analog of this was the demise of Life, Look, and Post, a huge circulation general purpose magazine 9 years ago. That same year, 300 special purpose magazines were created, most of which are still being published. 400 or so were added the following year, and so on. There are now more than 4,000 special interest magazines being published in the United States and no general purpose magazines. Everything is moving to this locality because they've got things in their hands now for the brainwash. They're accelerating the brainwash. It's not all brainwash. Others get in on it too. But something's happening. It's happening for a purpose. Now, the same thing happened to churches. They had 400 denominations. Now they're over 5,000. Just in a matter of 10 years in this country. Something's happening. 2 years ago, it's away from authority too. And traditional tradition. They went away from the tradition because they want to move you into new ways of thinking. 2 years ago, the National Association of Manufacturers and the United States Chamber of Commerce announced they were going to merge for all kinds of wonderful reasons, none of which was true. They were going to merge in order to survive. About a year ago, they announced they couldn't negotiate the merger, so now presumably they're going to die separately. Except that the Chamber has lately become much more responsive to the grassroots and may save it. The American Medical Association, another umbrella organization, is getting weaker as the groups within it, the pediatricians, surgeons, and so forth, and the county and local medical groups are getting stronger. We haven't noticed it, but there have been, this on the inside, but there have been 50 mergers of labor unions in the last 8 years. These kind of umbrella organizations are out of tune with the times. Certain ones are out of tune for reasons, others are coming down for reasons. Network television will lose ground to new options, the incredible array of cable, video discs, and new special interest networks. The crossover in politics came in 1976, a presidential year, when the number of people contributing to special interest groups like Save the Dolphins exceeded the number of people who contributed to the Democratic-Republican Party combined. That trend is continuing. The two great American political parties exist in name only. We have a Congress filled with independents. We may get some new political parties, but in tune with the decentralization of the country, there will be local new political parties, not national. We already have the Right to Life Party on the ballot in New York State. Now, we're moving into an area where the leftists and the left-wing liberals and all these are moving. There's a certain trend they're moving in. When they're moving in, I'm going to speak on this one anytime soon, every time the devil moves, it gives opportunity for God to move. And so this is giving a time for the moral majority, for the letting process. And we've taken advantage of it to some extent, but we need a lot more, because if they take advantage of these things 100 times more than us, then our advantages won't weigh so much. See? There's a lot more I could say if I had time. I'm not even touching my subject here. We are now truly a world economy because of instantaneously shared information. We have wiped out the information float. We're now deeply in a process of resorting out who's going to make what in this world. See? And we're already in this. How much is Japan here? And so we have all these international agreements. As part of this process, all the developed countries are deindustrializing. All of the industrialization. Now, you know that isn't the normal monopoly game. Even Japan, the most flexible country in the world, is getting out of the steel business and the shipbuilding business. South Korea will outdo her in steel and ships. Will be more economically built by the new shipbuilders, Brazil, Poland, and Spain. Now, you don't give up power like that. I mean, there's big machinery operating in this world that's changing the face overnight. World government is coming in quick. That means the rapture is getting near. That means we better get rid of our demonic forces and move on in, and so God can do something with us if we're ever going to do it. The United States and the rest of the developed countries are on the way to losing the following industries. Steel, automobile, railroad equipment, machinery, apparel, shoes, textile, and appliance. By the end of the century, the third world will make 25% of the world's manufactured goods. They were poor and didn't make anything, hardly. The end of the century is only 19 years away. Remember when President Kennedy was inaugurated? That's how far it is to the year 2000. Sobering thought, huh? You know that time has passed? Didn't seem like very long ago. That many more years will be the year 2000. It won't be long, folks. I mean, years are slipping by. We're moving into this thing. We developed nations are probably going to kill ourselves competing over steel and cars, and we should be moving in other new areas as the third world takes over the old tasks. That's why the Chrysler bailout was so important. That bailout is a big step down the path of turning the U.S. automobile industry into an employment program. Just as Britain turned its automobile and steel manufacturing into an employment program. We have to see Chrysler and other automobile companies in the world context. See, everything I'm mentioning in the world context now. That's the big industrialists are pushing this thing. They go over other nations. Who gave Japan that ability? United States. Industrialists. All big top industrialists went over there and built big plants, automated them beyond what we had in this country to outproduce us over the hill. Because they're making money on both ends. See, they're decentralizing. The big powers are decentralizing. The companies had nothing to do with it. I mean, Ford and Chrysler, they didn't decide to. They're stuck. I mean, they're stuck as far as the individuals who are managing most of those plants. It wasn't in their hands. It came from higher up than that. The boys who own, big boys who own all this are the ones who move over and build new plants and compete against these. Consider, in the world automobile market, we are reaching saturation. It will soon be a replacement market. There are now 86 countries that have automobile assembly plants. Didn't used to have. The United States used to make the cars for the whole world. Japan takes 13 man hours to build a car. The United States takes 30 man hours. Imports passed Ford and became number two to General Motors in 1979 with 20% of the car sales in the United States. But the bellwether state of California imports were 50% of car sales last year. 50% came from outside. It's been part of the conceit of the U.S. automobile industry that they never diversified. They thought they would go on forever. Now even Henry Ford is getting out what they're getting is good. Yesterday is over. We have to look at the new technological adventures, electronics, bio-industry, all in the alternative sources of energy, mining the seabeds. We have to work out, so we have to mine the seabeds because they hold all these big industrial oil places up so we can't have it. They force us to spend more money on more different things. This is part of the purpose program. We have to work out policies or at least let the marketplace do it to make the transition from the old to the new. By the way, how reliable is the Dow Jones as a barometer to the economic health and society or stock market with all those companies from the dying industries on this list? Like the economist, it needs a new index. I'm almost done here. Trend number four, from either or to multiple options. The high technology of chemistry and the pharmacological produced the pill that led to a revolution in lifestyles, away from either or to multiple options. See, these are all being done for reasons. We had to have a hierarchy in order to keep track of everybody and what they were up to. Now with a computer to keep track, we can restructure to a horizontal organization of many small groups and so forth. And even the computer is going to help them. Trend number five, from top down to bottom up structuring of work environment. A whole new attitude toward American workers is on the way. Here's the situation. The productivity growth rate is on a dismal downswing. Last year was the worst for productivity improvement in the nation's history. You see, we're sabotaging the nation by building up the third world. They don't want this nation top. They want it down. So we are willing to have a world order on one level. At the same time, over the last two decades, personal values have been changing radically. You can say that, you know, that's the truth. There's a growing demand for more satisfaction from life. It sounds good, but listen. Workers feel it too. The psychic pain is reflected in the low productivity. They are sick of being treated like machines in the service of increased productivity. Workers refuse to produce and even deliberately sabotage the products they make. That's because of their attitudes and the rebellions and all that thing that's come in. Then the 1930s and 40s people wouldn't be sabotaging their own things. They're no longer content with the traditional remedies offered up by the labor unions, such as more pay, four-day weeks, and better health benefits. They're having the best in the world's ever had, and they're still not satisfied. What they really want, like everybody else, is deep human satisfaction from the work. But industry has no compelling need to give it to them until now. These drooping productivity figures will finally force industry, in economic desperation, to give more than token attention to the mental health of workers. The workplace is for a good shaking up. An American worker is about to be saved by one of the most unlikely forces in society. Call it humanization, the human potential movement, or participatory management. In other words, industrial Laodicea. So the management does not have. You notice even now, bosses are even afraid to say, Jack, grab that, get over and. Oh, it's a. Would you please. Well, I think I'll rebel. Ha, ha, ha. And then they finally go over. And if you watch this today, sat back, say things. One day, over some hoofy, some places. Jim, when you come out and mop the floor, the floor was all, people made a mess. And he says, I'm not going to do it. And he grinned, he went and got the mop. See, he knew he had to. But inside, there was this thing. That attitude is permeating society out here today. There's a bad attitude. They want to participate, just like in the churches, in Laodicea. People are going to decide. They'll rank up. They'll decide all these things. This is coming for a purpose and a reason. And so people cannot run their own industries. You know what happens if you get a little industry and everybody wants to run it for you? You know what's going to happen? It's not going to be saved. They can call it saved for their attitudes. They're going to decide how to run your plant for you. Now, that's not what you call being saved. That's what they call being saved. It is often mistakenly thought that Japanese workers are so productive because they perform like robots, ever subservient to authority. The opposite is true. Unlike American workers, the Japanese are given enormous freedom to both plan and execute their work and solve problems alone without the help or interference of managers. The plants are run not from the top down like ours, for managers deliver orders, but from the bottom up, where the workers make many crucial decisions. Fully 90% of Japan's industrial workforce is organized in work groups of 8 to 11 people. The whole theory, the workers know their job better than anyone else, and given a chance, will be creative and self-motivated. Now, that's true to a point. Interestingly, the Japanese developed some of the management techniques from the theories of our own humanistic psychologists. Yeah, interesting enough. When the Japanese use their techniques on American workers, the changes are astounding. The Japanese Matsushita Company, several years ago, took over a Motorola plant in Chicago and began to produce Quasar TV sets. The company retained 1,000 online workers, but dismissed half the 600 supervisors and managers. Within 2 years, production doubled, and the reject rate of sets dropped from 60% to 4%. Now, they didn't tell you why, though. The reason is because they're so unsubmissive, and they won't obey the rules and authority anymore. And so they don't care about the company. They steal from the company. It's a sour, bad attitude that causes people to be non-productive. They work slow. They don't care how much. They don't care. This is like a lumber mill over here in Tacoma. The company got running them through the plywood. In fact, they said, union men said, let it go. Don't pull it slow. And they let all that beautiful plywood go into the hog and chew it all up at increased prices. They weren't going to touch it. They didn't care. And the heister man's on a lunch. The other man can't win a heister to bring in more load. So he has to sit there with us and sit there with the saws turning, doing nothing, until he gets finally finished with his ham sandwich. And that's the way it is out there. They don't care what it costs. Have two or three men stand around and watch the others. It doesn't make any difference. See, people, they steal from their own company. They no longer have an attitude of cooperation. And so that's why. Now when you make them a big wheel, sure they move in. But that's just the first sign. Now, back 40 years ago, you wouldn't have helped companies by doing that. But this brainwash is pushing them, forcing them to have to go this route. The management were not giving this away for nothing and easily. They're being forced to because they have developed attitudes that are pushing. And someday, it'll be controlled by the power groups down here instead of the management's appeal for a certain purpose. And who knows what the end of the revolt is going to be. Because once you get things down far enough to the local people, you get the Wild West all over again. Wait till this thing pushes a little bit further and they decide to rise up in groups and do certain things and take over the companies and do this for this reason and so forth. You're going to see a little change in this picture. I already see it coming. It's not going to look quite like this. They, like everybody else, want to change for more personal satisfaction and they are about to get it, even if the trigger is such an eye-glazing event as lower productivity figures, which it isn't always higher. A lot of times it's lower. And we've already seen that in this country. Because of how economically interlaced the United States is with the rest of the world, the only weapon it has against inflation that is in full control is productivity improvement. But that's been dropping. So have you been wondering why things are like it is? Productivity has been dropping. Why? Because they have moved out to cause the others to compete with us. As Peter Drucker says in his new book, Managing in Turbulent Times, productivity improvement will be management's most important task of the 1980s, and in this regard, creative management will be more important than creative technology. Now, see, the attitudes have led to lower production, liberalism has led to lower production, and it equals a force to force private industry into a Laodicea camp for the next step that they're going to bring. Now, I've got to close it. Let me look at this a minute. In summary, I think the decades of the 1980s will be very exciting and uncertain. We must make uncertainty your friend. It is the only certainty we have. Beautiful. In the decade of 1980s, we'll be restructuring our society from an industrial to an informational society. We are decentralizing it to home, while at the same time we move into a truly world economy where the redistribution of production spells opportunity for all of us. They mean for all of them. We are becoming an increasingly high-touch world as we continue to push high technology. We are becoming a multiple-option, highly market-segmented society, and we will be a more participatory society. In short, we will be a much more complicated society that we don't need. And the period of working through this structural change will be painful. But we will be a more interesting, creative, and nourishing society, they mean, for the liberal viewpoint. And I didn't get a chance to bring my last one, which is an excellent article by Bob Mumford, showing the spiritual decay, what he is seeing among the charismatics today. And his preaching has ended up, you know, right in line with my preaching for the very same reasons. Maybe I get a chance to read that to you sometime. Beautiful article. Taking a certain stand that has to be taken because of what's happening out here in the charismatic movement. I'm glad to see him putting an article out like that. And we'll maybe deal with that if we can. I'll take a break, about a 10-minute break, and then worship service.